Terrorists and terrorist wannabes continue to terrorize Columbia University. Columbia University, of course, welcomes it. If unofficially, we've been covering this for a few days. Today, we thought we would hear from some of the actual so-called protesters, but really, and supposed students. We're gonna kind of disabuse people of that notion that it's all students as well. Welcome to the Daily Objective, day 202 of the war in Israel. Hey, Morgan, should we go straight into the first clip? These are students from Columbia, from what I understand, talking in a protest in NYU. But those details don't really matter. As you will see from them, other details don't matter either.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
Oh.
I came from Columbia. I was there up at Columbia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
Yeah. We all wish you were more educated. And, you know, this I'm sure these students think there are some sort of rebels, you know, standing up to authority, where they're really the you know, most blind conformist sheep possible, following something that, going to a protest that, you know, Columbia to NYU is, for those of you familiar with Manhattan, so they're not close. Like, it's quite the journey. But you know, if everybody's going, if they say we you're needed, if you say you're needed for Palestine, that's all that matters to these people. They clearly are not thinking people, and I think these two girls are not the exception. You know, and in what I see there, Morgan, you are actually a recent university student and very much familiar with university life, although not in in New York, but I think several things that they probably have in common. Yeah, your thoughts when you saw that? Have you ever encountered that kind of again, I'm going to carefully say thinking, but I use that word loosely with students in Edinburgh.
Well, yes, I think so, in the sense that what surprised me about students were a couple of things, but one was just how apathetic they are. And I think that's pretty across the board. So when people talk about there being a kind of hardcore left-wing group of students on campus, actually it tends to really be a minority of the students. And then the rest of the students will tend that way in their sympathy, but they're largely just very apathetic. And so they might come out to these protests, but it doesn't surprise me really that they didn't really know fully what they were there for when they were put on the spot. They kind of, I think, have the impression, oh, this is very important. Something evil is going on. We need to come out for it. But as that girl clearly shows, when someone just asks her to explain what she's there for, she hasn't got a clue. There was a similar video put up by Trigonometry with Konstantin Kissin just a few days ago of him walking around London at the protest, speaking to people and just saying, you know, what does people are holding a sign saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And he asked them just, what does it mean? And literally none of them could answer. He got shouted at by one guy who walked past, but the rest of them didn't have a clue. One of them just said, oh, I just picked it up at the stall. And one of them said, oh, I don't really feel comfortable to comment. So it is a, you know, a shocking thing in a way that they're so ignorant. The other ones there will really have that kind of hardcore view where they've gone to class and they feel very strongly about these things. But there's an awful kind of conformity at universities. I mean, just in a minor way, the other thing that shocked me about university students was just how much they liked to wear uniforms. Almost like everyone would dress like each other, everyone would think like each other, everyone liked the same things as each other. Whereas the image of students is that they're individualists, that they, you know, they want to rebel for the sake of rebelling. They want to be themselves. They don't want to be like everyone else. And it just so wasn't the case. And ideologically, that's the case as well. And even when they don't really know what they're on about, they'll come out in force for these kind of things. And I think these videos are are worth showing to people just to show how bottomless some of this is. But it's something that should be expected in a way.
By the way, I haven't been following COVID news closely. Is there an outbreak now in New York? Because one of them was wearing a mask, and I don't know if that's part of the you know, I remember this was a you know, some people definitely wore masks as a symbol, and like after this was a thing of the past in London, I traveled to the U.S. a few times, and I was always shocked that in places like New York, people still wear masks. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. All right, we've had our fun. Now let's go to something a bit more sinister. And this is from Colombia, or just outside Colombia, but in, yeah, that those protests, so-called protests over there.
My mother was in your place. I wish my mother was in your place. I wish I was a mother. So if you guys want to repeat after me, it's okay. If you're not, please take care of us, come on. Sorry for getting angry. Okay, you guys ready? Look back out of it. Yo, Lamia, you guys in? So again, in English, it means mother of the Shaheed, mother of the martyr. How lucky you are. I wish my mother was in your place. And this terrifies Iowa because they realize they can't do shit to us. Not even that. The best they can do is hold our dead bodies.
Have their badges.
Yem Shaheed Niyalek!
Yem Shaheed Niyalek!
Yaret in me, Babalek!
Yaret in me, Babalek!
You'll never die. There is only one solution. It's Intifada revolution. Free Palestine.
Yeah, you know, just seeing them try to go like as if they have any idea what it is they're shouting. Yeah, first of all, I, you know, don't know if this guy is a student, but maybe he is, maybe he isn't. We know that there were non-students involved. But it's also amazing if you actually think of a cause and you believe in it and you go to some event that is for that cause. You still have your mind, you know, you still have the ability to say, you know what, actually, yeah, when you tell me babies are dying and so on, I'm against the killing of them. And then when somebody tells me, we can't wait to be martyrs, you can't do shit to us, the worst you can do is hold our dead bodies, I'm thinking, yeah, well, actually, isn't that pretty bad? Or if death is a good thing, why are we against the killing of babies? A lot of questions would arise in a somewhat active mind that somehow found itself in such a protest. But yeah, these people try, I'm sure, very uncomfortably to repeat, because maybe repeating it in not correct Arabic is offensive to Arabic culture. Maybe repeating it correctly with the accent and everything, that might be cultural appropriation. It's very difficult to be these people. I have no sympathy to them, for them, but I take note of the difficulty. Morgan.
Yeah, there is something risible about the fact that they kind of mumble out the broken Arabic. But I think this, you know, follow-up clip shows that they're not all just clueless. I mean, I think even the ones who are there just being second-handed and conforming to the opinions of their peers are doing something that's immoral. But the ones who are chanting things like that, and the ones especially later who are chanting Intifada revolution, really are evil and really do have an idea of what they're doing. And so in these videos, you're seeing much more of the kind of hardcore group there. Although I think those girls in the first video would have been along there and chanting anyway. So they make some of the fodder that actually I think exists in any of these kind of protest movements. And, you know, we were saying just this the other day, people who are looking at this and who are shocked, what are you going to do about it? Are you, if you're someone who funds a university, are you just going to continue to do that with no moral judgment about this at all? Because everyone's kind of aware over at least the last 10 years, if not longer, that the universities have become very radicalized, let's say. But there's a real inculcation of ideas where the professors will inculcate ideas in children where they'll go out into the streets and chant for murder and support terrorist groups. And there's no other way that you can see it, that they're openly supporting Hamas. And that's just a pure evil thing to be doing. And there's, and mixed in with that, there's an awful lot of anti-Semitism, either which is explicitly coming from some of the radical ones, and then which the second-handed ones are just coming, are just following along with. So I think this should really appall people, and you shouldn't be giving your money or your sanction to these universities anymore. You should tell them that we will not support you if this is the product and effect that you're putting out into the world.
Yeah, and people should also ask, parents should ask whether they want to set, first of all, whether they want to send their kids to university at all, and whether, and then be selective, not in the same way that people were selective up until now. Like Columbia is a great university. Of course, you'll want to send your kids there, but this is a part of what that university is now. And do you want your kids there? And yeah, of course, if it sounded like I'm making excuses for any of them, they're absolutely, anybody participating in that is immoral. Anybody chanting Intifada Revolution doesn't, if they don't know the meaning of the word Intifada, that's no excuse. You took the time out of your life to go there and protest and chant along with whatever you're being told to chant along with. And you can't Google a word. You can't see what the history of actual Intifada has been in Israel with the first Intifada and the second Intifada, which was basically a series of suicide bombings in against civilians. So yeah, before we go to the next one, I want to read a bit from this tweet from Eitan Fischberger, because it also ties into some of what we've seen already. So Eitan was tweeting about this guide that was, let me just read the tweet. A few days ago, to little fanfare, organizers from the Yale and Columbia's Liberated Encampment Zones published this guide containing 14 points that explains the protesters' strategy in the weeks and months to come. The guide was endorsed by the National Students for Justice in Palestine, and Eitan says it could have been easily have been written by them. It's currently being circulated among many of the encampments and is being translated into multiple languages. Everyone who wants to understand how potential widespread anarchy is in the U.S. might look, or how widespread anarchy in the U.S. might look, should read it. Here are some of the most important points. And then, so these are points that Eitan mentioned in his tweet. I haven't read the full thing, but these points, they make the point strongly and make it clear who these people are. Point two, an occupation needs to spread in order to survive. New buildings need to be taken on campus throughout the city and across the country. Take the enemy by surprise. Strive for daily or even hourly successes, however small. At all costs, retain superior morale. So just to mention, this guide is titled First We Take Columbia, Lessons from the April 1968 Occupations Movement. For people who aren't familiar with it, in 1968 in Columbia, there were protests over the war in Vietnam and over a gymnasium that was being built that was opposed by the local community because it said it was racist and whatnot. This is first of all, the fact that they're talking about the enemy, that's interesting choice of words when they're supposedly students in that university talking about the university they chose to go to as the enemy. Should we let's quickly go through a few of the other points because I think they're relevant to this. So point six, occupations draw strength from the specter of a riot. The April 1968 occupations took place in the immediate aftermath of the Holy Week of riots in the surrounding neighborhood and cities across the country after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Campus administrators, city officials, and the police department worried that any attempt to suppress the occupations might lead to unrest in the surrounding neighborhood. Harlem might invade Columbia. An occupation today will be in a stronger position if it is similarly able to build and mobilize support from the surrounding neighborhood. So they are very well aware that the police and university administrators are not going to stand up to them. So, you know, they're saying in their own guide to themselves, basically, that the weakness shown on the other side emboldens them. And yet we keep seeing that weakness.
Yeah, I mean, and this is obviously referencing back to the New Left protests of the 60s, which Rand had a lot to say about. And if anyone's interested in Rand's thought on this, because she had a lot to say on this, you want to go read a book which might have just been republished under a different title, but the one I have is Return of the Primitive, the Anti-Industrial Revolution. I don't know if you know what the new title is, Razi. But she was very condemnatory of all of this stuff. And this little pamphlet that they've released kind of reads a little bit like Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, if anyone's familiar with that, which is a very kind of cynical text, which is just about how radical revolutionary groups like this don't need to kind of play by the rules. All you need to push for is power. And I think that very much accords with what they've written there. And they're very much looking back to the 60s movements for inspiration in that. And the New Left 60s protests were awful. And if people become aware of this now, you should be really worried that they're taking inspiration from these kind of groups, because they were openly kind of violent, cynical protests. And if this is what your kids are going to university and learning and coming out like, you know, the New Left kind of movement simmered down for a while. But if they're reemerging in the culture, it's a very bad sign, I think.
So I'm not going to read all the points because we don't have time, but I'm going to read the next one. And if we have time, we'll get to the others at the end. But point seven is relevant. So the first task then is to open the campus to the community, students from other campuses, residents of the surrounding neighborhood, and outside agitators need to be welcomed in. In April 1968, 500 people marched on the gate at 116th Street and Broadway. The NYPD stood down out of fear that violence might otherwise erupt. Similar tactics might be necessary today. So yeah, you know, we talk about this with that guy that we just saw telling people to want to be martyrs, and with generally the fact that so many are hiding their faces, this is not necessarily as much a student rebellion as it is, you know, terrorists and terrorist wannabes from all walks of life using university as some of it. And of course, some of them are without a doubt students. Any thoughts on that? And then we'll go to the super chats and then we'll go to the next clip.
Just to mute myself, just that it completely accords with the actions that they've taken. It very much follows that path. And you have seen the police be very reluctant. Although people were arrested in Colombia, there's not been anywhere near enough of a police response to this. And again, that accords with the response we've seen from the police, not just in response to students, but broadly in response to the pro-Palestine marches or leftist marches throughout the Western world in the last few years. And you know, from their perspective, they're probably wise to make that observation, but it's a deeply immoral tactic to be pursuing. And for all the professors, for example, at Princeton, who wrote an open letter condemning the way the students were treated and saying that they need to be all released and they can't be held accountable or responsible for any of this stuff, I think this just shows what a naked and cynical cover-up those professors are really trying to do, because the students are playing for keeps. And they really want to push as far as they can go. This isn't just an innocent, peaceful protest, which, you know, happened to have broken out into some violence, or like those protests a few years ago, if you remember, I think, was it the BLM protests, where the newsreader was saying this is a mostly peaceful protest and there's a building on fire in the background. What they're doing is thought out, planned, intentional. And anyone who's making excuses for it is just as guilty as the protesters.
Yeah. Thank you, Bonnie, for the super chat. Bonnie says, just chanting what you don't know is immoral. It's not good for you. Yeah, I was just following orders. Defense didn't work didn't work for Eichmann and wasn't true then. It's not true for those students. I don't know if any of them will become the next Eichmann, but they clearly have some similarities. Thank you, Gail, for the super chat. Gail says, thought connects the dots to the roots of anti-progress. We're going to have something about the anti-progress, the more explicit part of the anti-progress aspect of these people towards the end. Thank you, Jonathan, for the super chat. Let's play the next clip. All right, we can't hear it that well, and I think we got the point of it, and there's somebody drumming in the background because, you know, that's a part of it. He's chanting, "I love Hamas, I love Hamas," and then is that Laura Loomer or is it somebody from her team asking her? I'm not up to date with the Trump influencers, but and unsurprisingly, these people cover their faces, which, as I said yesterday, I wonder why. I mean, are they going to actually try? Of course, this will hurt them in the future, but it'll hurt them in the future only if they want something from the people whose murder they are advocating for. So, yeah, Morgan, any thoughts about that guy and that interaction there?
Well, it's a good clip to have of him saying, yes, I support Hamas. But this, in a sense, I don't think you need to know to see this clip to know that what they're doing is supporting Hamas. An awful lot of people who are criticizing Israel and who are on the pro-Palestinian side will say, no, we condemn Hamas just as much as anyone else. We're appalled by what they do. But if you look at the logic of what they're saying and of the position they're taking and of what they're opposing, I think you have to understand that it defaults to a pro-Hamas perspective at the very least. And the people who are really hardcore and radical and a bit brave to say, well, I don't want to compliment them, but you know what I mean, who've got the guts to say the awful things that they really believe, will come out with the kind of thing that guy is saying. But I think, unfortunately, too many people are sort of taken in by the surface level protestations from people that, no, you know, we don't like Hamas. You know, we saw with Cenk Uygur and Owen Jones and all these other lefty journalists who are so hard on Israel, and will put up a kind of cursory condemnation of Hamas and say, of course, October 7th was terrible, and of course we don't like that, and then get quite frustrated when people seem to keep implying to them that they're in favor of Hamas, and they get quite annoyed by that. And it's because I think they have to lie to themselves that they aren't pro-Hamas in some way, or that their position doesn't amount to a pro-Hamas position. And for the ones who are maybe a bit more stupid and a bit more reckless, they'll just come out and say it. But an awful large number of people, more than just this one guy, actually hold that position. Just a lot of them won't openly say it, either because they don't want to get themselves in trouble, or because they have to lie to themselves about it because they have to get to sleep at night.
Yeah, I agree with you. We don't need that to know that they support Hamas, but we need it in order to know that they support Hamas. It's nice when they actually say what they mean. They don't hide behind the slogans, and they don't hide behind you guys are going to talk about in the reality show, like terms like human rights, when they are actually, human rights organizations are supporters of Hamas, but not in such an open way. So there's that advantage to it. Thank you, Wes, for the super chat. Thank you, Hannah, for the super chat. Hannah says, totally medieval tribalism, no morality, just bloodlust. Yes, and again, there are the people who are ideologically super on board with terrorism and with the idea of murdering all the Jews, and then there are the people who just go along with it. And when we think about the two students at the beginning who are just going along with it, you know, it's kind of funny to watch it, but also remember such people, people do end up taking up arms just because they go along with it. It's not just taking whatever line it is that goes from Columbia all the way down to NYU. It's it can get much worse. People can actually live by the chance that they repeat. And back to the point about that Gail made about anti-progress. So a few days ago was Earth Day, and of course the pro-Hamas protesters, while protesting against the genocide that they imagine, also protested against everything that makes everything possible, i.e. energy. And this was quite the interesting protest. Let's have a look. The planet has officially been saved. Look, Colombia shut down in-person classes, but there's definitely some higher learning going on there. The thing is they're wearing all these Hamas or actually it's PLO scarves while doing this dance. I don't know what it's meant to do, but look, these people are gonna be your future leaders, America. So pay close attention. They're gonna be your future leaders. They're gonna be the future lobbyists in Amnesty International and organizations like that. Morgan, your thoughts on that, and maybe you know something about how that might actually help save the planet, that dance.
Well, it's a mystery to me, but like we were talking before about second-handedness and people just going along with the crowd. There's nothing that symbolizes and suggests to me more that someone is of that mentality more than having an affinity for modern art. I don't just mean maybe that there's one odd piece that you kind of like, but if you really think there's something to modern art and you take it very seriously, or kind of performance art like that, then yeah, you truly are one of the crowd who's pronouncing that the emperor is fully clothed when he's actually naked. And it shouldn't be a surprise that these kids like this stuff. The universities put on this kind of nonsense. You know, I could tell you all about the modern art gallery that exists within the university here that they tell you very seriously is very important. It's all very important. And is, you know, going to help save the environment. And it's just some weird flashing lights and someone making some weird noises projected onto a screen. It's all terrible stuff, right? And so it shouldn't be a surprise either that it's coming up in the Palestine protests, but that will achieve nothing. Modern art, modern performance art kind of protests or performances like that just turn people off. So it won't, we can be happy to say that that is a truly ineffectual protest.
Yeah, look, these protests, we started and we ended with a little bit of humor, but because we think, if we're not gonna have these few moments of laughter, we will be crying the whole time. But it is important to pay close attention to just how bad and just how dangerous the situation is. We're gonna keep covering it as long as necessary, as we do on this channel. And in the reality show, which starts a couple of minutes after this show ends, Morgan, Marco, Richard, and Alejandro will be talking about the latest Amnesty International report, which really sounds like it was written by Anthony Blinken. So stay tuned for that. We will be back with the Daily Objective tomorrow. Thanks, and see you soon.
Bye-bye.